Okay, thanks. Okay, so let me begin by giving a one-page summary of what we learned last time. So let me remind you that we have been discussing properties of tachyon effective action on unstable D-brains in string theory. And what we learned in that process is that if we look at the tachyon effective action, which I denoted by V effective of T, then this action has a maximum at T equal to 0. That's the reason why the field T is tachyonic in the first place, and a minimum at T equal to T naught. This minimum, of course, could be a local minimum or a global minimum, depending on whether we are dealing with bosonic string theory or super string theory. Okay. We also got a specific relationship between the values of V effective at T equal to 0 and at T equal to T naught. In particular, if we fix the additive constant in the tachyon effective potential such that it vanishes at T equal to 0, then at T equal to T naught, at the location of this minimum, it has value equal to minus Ep, where Ep is simply the total tension of the original brain system. Okay. So this effectively means that at the minimum, at the local minimum at T equal to T naught, the total energy density, which is the sum of the tension of the brain system and the tachyon effective potential, is identically 0. And this led us to identify the configuration T equal to T naught as vacuum without any D-brain. And then we went ahead and further discussed various soliton solutions in this tachyon effective field theory. And we said that these soliton solutions typically describe lower dimensional D-brains. And if we begin with sufficient number of unstable brain system, then we can represent all the lower dimensional D brains as some kind of soliton solutions on the original brain system. So this is where we ended last time. Now, all the solutions that we have talked about so far has been time-independent solutions. So, it's a natural question at this stage that what about time-dependent solutions? Okay, why only look at time-independent solutions? And in particular, the kind of time-dependent solutions that we will be focusing our attention on are as follows. So, here I have plotted again the tachyon effective potential, but this time I have also added the energy density coming from the brain tension. Okay. If you call this total potential as V of T, then the plot of V versus T has this specific shape. This is for the superstring theory. Okay. Namely, that at T equal to T naught, this total effective potential, total potential vanishes identically. Okay. And it has a maximum at T equal to 0. And now we could ask the question that what would happen if, say, we displace the tachyon a little bit away from the maximum, okay, and then simply let it evolve by its equation of motion. Okay. What kind of time evolution we will see during this process? Okay. And this is the kind of question that we will be addressing now. Okay. And again, what I will do is to first state all the results, and then I'll start discussing how one goes about deriving the various results, both the results that I described last time as well as the results that we have, we'll be talking about here, about time dependent solutions.
So,
yeah.
So the maximum is the space field in the brain. There are other low dimensional D-brains, so should there be other local minima in the middle between the maximum and the extremal minimum?
Okay, yeah. So in this case, first of all, the maximum is not necessarily space-filling D-brain, it's some DP-brain. Okay, and you are right that there are various other classical solutions, but we will be looking at the solutions which are spatially homogeneous. Okay, so those other minima which correspond to various solitons, right, they will not be seen in this context.
Okay,
but certainly in the more general context you will have various other local minimum, okay, correspond to the other solutions. Okay, are there any other questions? Okay, so before we go ahead and try to describe what results one gets in the full string theory, okay, we can ask what would happen if T had described an ordinary scalar field. And by an ordinary scalar field, I simply mean that if T satisfied an equation of this form. Okay, if you have a standard scalar field, and if you are looking at space independent solutions, okay, then the scalar field equations of motion will have a contribution from the kinetic term, and then there is a contribution from the potential term, and this will be what we'll get for the equation of motion for the scalar field. Now, since this equation has two time derivatives, we need two initial conditions to solve this equation. Okay. And so, what we'll get in this case is that the trajectory that we'll get will be characterized by two parameters. Okay. And we can choose those two parameters to be the initial position of t, namely the value of t at time x not equal to 0, and the initial velocity of t, namely the time derivative of t at x not equal to 0. And once these two values are given, then we can use this equation of motion to find out how the tachyon evolves as a function of time. Now, to proceed further, let's still work with this ordinary scalar field and see what kind of insight we can get about these trajectories. And here, we can try to distinguish two cases which have somewhat different behavior. Okay, perhaps I should have said here that here, although we have two inequivalent parameters, using time transition invariance, we can in fact set one of the parameters to 0. Okay, and we will now try to see exactly how that is done in the case of an ordinary scalar field. Okay, because given an orbit, the time translation of the orbit is also automatically a solution. Okay, but that gives in some sense the same orbit. Okay, so one of the initial conditions can be absorbed into the time translation invariance. Okay, so let's see how.
So that means you can have a well-defined Hamiltonian.
Yeah, in this case, yes. I mean, if the scalar field equation of motion is given by this, then there clearly is a well-defined Hamiltonian. Okay. To see how exactly we can absorb the parameter into one of the parameters into time by using time translation, we can consider two separate cases. Again, in the case of an ordinary scalar field, rolling in this potential. Okay. First, we can consider the case where the total energy associated with the orbit is less than the value at this maximum, okay, which we have been calling EP. Okay, the total energy, total tension of the brain system that we get at t equal to 0. Okay. So, here is the picture. So, the orbit corresponds to having energy equal to E total, which is less than the value at the maximum. And in this case, it's clear that what we'll get is a kind of orbit which will basically be confined in this range. Okay? The scalar field will simply go back and forth between these two turning points. Okay? So, at some point during the motion of the scalar field, it will come to rest. Okay? That is the turning point. And we can always choose our origin of time to be that specific point when the scalar field comes to rest. Okay. So, this will correspond to choosing an initial condition where t is equal to lambda, where lambda is some parameter, and the time derivative of t equal to 0 at x not equal to 0, and this will give the one parameter family of orbits characterized by this parameter lambda. Okay, so this is the only inequivalent parameter that you will have in this case. The second case is when the total energy associated with the orbit is larger than the value, the energy at the maximum. In this case, the field will simply pass through the point t equal to 0 because it will have enough velocity, it will have non-zero velocity when it reaches the point t equal to 0, and presumably it will oscillate between some wider on a wider orbit, okay, if there are turning points here and here. But what is clear is that there will be some point during the motion when the scalar field t will pass through the origin, okay, that it will pass through the configuration t equal to 0 at some point, and we can choose our origin of time to be that instant where the scalar field passes through t equal to 0. Okay. So in this case we can choose the initial condition so that t is equal to 0 but the velocity is non-zero at time x not equal to 0, and now v will be the parameter that characterizes the orbit. Okay. So this way, both in this case as well as in this case, we can characterize the orbit by one inequivalent parameter. Okay, but of course, once you have gotten the orbit, you can always time translate and generate another parameter. Now, in either of these two cases, if you are dealing with an ordinary scalar field, by simple energy conservation rule, it is clear that the energy density, which I will call T naught naught, this will remain constant, okay, because the energy cannot be dissipated. Okay, you are talking about a classical scalar field theory. But surely the other components of energy momentum tensor need not remain constant and they will vary with time. Okay. But the form of the other components of the energy momentum tensor will be constrained by various symmetries of the problem, okay, namely that we had a Lorentz invariant theory to begin with. Okay. And when you are talking about a time translation in a time dependent spatially homogeneous configuration, we still have the spatial rotation. Okay. And that symmetry guarantees that first of all the mixed components should vanish. And the Tij, when I and j both are spatial indices, must have a form like this. It should be proportional to delta ij, but the constant of proportionality can be an arbitrary function of time. Okay, that will depend on the dynamics of the scalar field, okay, the particular potential that you have chosen. Okay. And this quantity P of x naught is known normally as the pressure associated with this scalar field. Okay. So, the typical behavior that we will expect in the case of an ordinary scalar field is that as the scalar field oscillates between its two turning points here or between the two turning points here, the pressure will also oscillate between its two extreme values. Okay. Because the pressure is determined in terms of the scalar field and its derivatives. So, clearly if the scalar field has an oscillatory behavior, so will be the pressure. Okay, so with this introduction, with this insight about what happens for an ordinary scalar field, let me now state the results that one gets when one deals with the tachyon rolling on an unstable D plane. Now, the first thing that one finds is that even in this case, we can find a set of orbits characterized by one inequivalent parameter. Okay. And again, as in the previous case, you can generate one more parameter by time translation. Okay. I am simply not considering that additional parameter that you could generate by time translation. Now, I should say here that nobody has really proved that we cannot get other solutions. Okay. All we know is that it is possible to get at least a one parameter family of solutions, okay, which describe this rolling of the tachyon on an unstable D-plane system. Okay. And we can calculate the energy momentum tensor associated with this particular solution, okay, which is again characterized by this parameter lambda. Okay. And the results are given in this box over here. Okay. So this is the result for the case when total energy is less than Ep. The energy density T naught naught is constant as we would have expected in the case of an ordinary scalar field, okay, and this simply reflects that even though string theory is complicated, Okay, it has a time transition invariance, and hence we expect the total energy density to be constant. Okay, and indeed it is constant. And this parameter lambda tilde, okay, is the parameter that characterizes the different orbits. Okay, and we can see here that by this expression for T dot naught guarantees that the energy density is less than Ep, because this quantity is always less than 1. Okay. Then the other components of the energy momentum tensor, again by the symmetry consideration, has the form that I described here. Okay, namely Ti naught is identically 0 and Tij has this form. Okay. But the expression for the pressure that one gets is slightly unusual, okay, compared to what one would expect for a motion of this kind. So here is what one gets for the pressure. Pressure is given by minus Ep times some specific function of time, and this function of time is given here. And I should mention here that in writing down these expressions, I have omitted one trivial delta function, okay, which basically says that all the components of the energy momentum tensor are localized on the plane of the brain. Okay. So if we had a space filling D brain, then of course this would be the complete answer. But suppose you have a DP brain, okay, which spans part of space, okay, then clearly the energy density is localized on the plane of the brain. Okay, so you have to multiply each of these expressions, okay, by this delta of the transverse coordinates. Okay, but I will not write them down explicitly in the in various formulae that I'll show you. Okay, those that will be understood. Okay, are there any questions?
Yeah. Why is the function f not periodic in x zero?
Yeah. So what this seems to say, okay, let me go to the next transparency and then I'll come back to see what kind of interpretation it might have. Yeah.
The formula for f of x naught and t naught naught does not have the non-perturbative term from lambda tilde. Is it possible to prove that this is the case, or is it an assumption?
Okay, this, as I'll discuss, this is obtained by doing this analytic continuation from the Euclidean case. Okay, and at least in the Euclidean case, I think one can show that it doesn't have any non-perturbative contribution in lambda tilde, because the answer is, I mean, doesn't really use perturbation theory in lambda tilde. Okay. Now, the question is, when you go from the Euclidean to the Minkowski to the weak rotated case, okay, you can generate additional terms. Okay. I don't know whether you can or not. So here, this is obtained simply by weak rotating the Euclidean answer. Okay. But there, we can clearly see that this is the complete answer.
Now, if you assume that there are no non-perturbative terms in lambda, I was wondering whether one can argue for the statement that you made. You said that it's a priori puzzling that in a theory that is as complicated as string theory, the solution is still parameterized by one number.
Yeah.
So I was wondering, if you assume that there are no non-perturbative terms in lambda, whether one can argue as follows, to say that to all orders in lambda, or lambda tilde, it's true on the level of just perturbing quotient action by the verb you see it sort of with your eyes, you know what I mean?
Yeah, okay.
And so it's really the issue other, in some sense, in some finite region in lambda, you would expect from this point of view, unless there's some non-perturbative disaster.
Okay, yeah. So you can then do the following exercise, right? Take, say, a phi cube theory. Okay, take this case, the ordinary scalar field with phi cube interaction, okay, and try to repeat this analysis by doing a perturbation expansion in lambda. Okay. In a phi cube theory, of course, we know that it will oscillate back and forth. Okay. We don't care about the fact that the potential is unbounded from below here. Okay. And we can ask, what happens if we examine the phi cube answer, okay, as a perturbation series in lambda? Okay. What one finds in there is that the perturbation expansion, okay, in fact, becomes divergent, okay, beyond a certain value of time. Okay, and that value of time is precisely this turning point. Okay, so if there was such a turning point, okay, which was not seen by this perturbation expansion, what one would expect is that the perturbation expansion would diverge. Okay, but here the fact that we don't see any divergence, right, that the perturbation expansion is a perfectly convergent function, okay, that in my view indicates that it is non-perturbative. Right, otherwise, I mean, the perturbation expansion will break down. Yeah, but I mean, this is only, I mean, drawing analogy with the phi cube theory, right. Okay, so here is the same expression again for the function, okay, for this whatever I have given here. Okay. Now, if we examine the function f of x naught carefully, okay, we can see that it has two interesting properties. That first of all, irrespective of the value of this parameter lambda tilde, okay, as time goes to infinity, okay, this function goes to zero, okay, which essentially means that the pressure, okay, doesn't oscillate, but it simply goes to zero asymptotically as time goes to infinity. Now, this seems to suggest that if we really try to use this picture, which is given here, it's as if that instead of oscillating about the minimum, the system is taking infinitely long time to approach the bottom of the potential. Okay, that seems to be the only kind of interpretation that you could give, okay, if you want to use an effective field theory description. And you have seen in Piljin's lecture that he did write down an effective field theory, okay, which has this property. Okay, that in that effective field theory, if you begin by putting some initial condition t equal to lambda and let it evolve, okay, the system approaches the minimum, okay, and it takes an infinite time to approach the minimum, and as the system approaches the minimum, the pressure goes to zero. Okay, but this does require a non-standard form of the effective field theory. Okay, if we just take the kinetic plus potential term, then this will not happen. Okay, but in any case, I'll not talk about the effective field theory picture very much. This is what we get from string theory, and so what I am doing here is to simply saying what results we get out of string theory. Okay, so this is one result that one can see by examining this function. The second result is that if we take lambda tilde equal to half, okay, which basically is the end of the parameter space, because if you take lambda tilde to be larger than half, okay, then that's equivalent to taking some value lambda tilde less than half, okay, because there is a periodicity in these expressions. Okay. So if we take lambda tilde equal to half, then first of all, energy density is identically zero, okay, which you can see clearly. But one can also see with a little bit of work that this function f of x naught for lambda tilde equal to half is in fact identically zero. Okay. So this means that for this choice of lambda tilde, this is a particular orbit, for this choice of lambda tilde, the energy density vanishes identically as well as the pressure vanishes identically. Okay. And so the natural interpretation of this would be simply that we are placing the tachyon at the minimum. Okay, so different lambda tilde are characterizing like different orbits, okay, at different energies. Lambda tilde equal to half corresponds to zero energy, zero pressure, and that is naturally interpreted as if we are simply sitting at the bottom of the potential. Okay. And finally, let me add one more comment that in string theory, besides energy momentum tensor, which is determined by how the system couples to gravity, okay, we can also consider something called a dilaton charge, okay, which simply measures how a specific D-brain system couples to dilaton field. Okay, so if we define dilaton charge by asking how the system couples to the dilaton field, we can find again an expression for the dilaton charge, and that turns out to have the form of Ep multiplied by the same function f of x naught that appeared here. Okay. And so you see that this again goes to zero as time goes to infinity. Okay. So these facts will be important in the last lecture when I'll try to give an interpretation of what this system is describing. Okay, but at present we simply take this as results given by string theory, and I'll describe later how one goes about trying to derive these results. Okay, are there any questions? Yeah.
What is the difference between this picture where the pressure goes to zero and when you think of like a weakly interacting field theory where it could be average kinetic energy such that the pressure vanishes?
See, here you are not doing an averaging, right? Because here we see that, that would be like if the scalar field was oscillating around its minimum. Okay, then the pressure will oscillate and one can show that by the virial theorem the average pressure will be zero, right? That certainly doesn't seem to be what is happening here, right? Here the pressure is going to zero asymptotically, okay? So it's not clear whether there is a relationship between an oscillating scalar field and this field over here. Yeah.
Was a complex field.
That's right.
It seems that you could have also some dynamics that goes around.
So we will certainly see this if we choose a more complicated initial condition. Okay, I am describing an orbit where the initial condition has been chosen, where the tachyon is simply replaced away from the maximum and then we let it roll. Okay, so for DD bar system, we certainly expect that there will be more complicated orbits, okay, where you can give it an angular, velocity, and that will all evolve in a more complicated fashion. Yeah, so this is only part of the, a subspace of the all possible trajectories for the DD bar system. Yeah. Yeah, we'll try to describe, see it in the last lecture, okay, that how one could try to relate this picture, okay, this analysis, this result to our usual understanding that either a DD bar system or an unstable D-brain, okay, as it decays, should eventually go into closed strings. Okay, we'll try to make that connection in the last lecture.
Energy is consumed here.
Yeah.
And is consumed with that picture. At the end of the day, the energy should turn into that of the closed string.
No, energy of course has to be conserved because you are using classical open string field theory. Okay, the whole analysis is being done at tree level. As I said, we are working the GS goes to zero limit. Okay, in that limit, okay, there is a time transition invariance in the system. Right, this energy is the total energy. Okay? Total energy has to be conserved. But it will go into something, and that something is already contained in this field theory, right? Because this field theory by itself is time transition invariant, right? So we should have an energy momentum conservation in this field theory. Okay. So what I'll try to argue is that this field theory, in some sense, already knows about the closed strings in which this will go into. But there is no way the energy could have been non-conserved, okay, in this problem, because there is a time transition invariance in the problem. Right, and you are solving classical equations of motion. Yeah.
Are there other points in the parameter space except lambda equal to half have certain interpretation, like this interpretation for tachyon for the case lambda equal to 1/2, which corresponds to tachyon at minimum.
Yeah.
Potential. So how about the other values of the parameter space?
No, other values typically represent these complicated orbits, right? When you begin with some, arbitrary initial value, okay, and you, you don't expect any, lambda equal to an integer. Well, see, the point is, as I said, there is a periodicity. So between, once you go lambda beyond half, right, you are really representing the same orbits, right? Nothing changes when lambda goes beyond half, because lambda equal to half plus epsilon is the same as lambda equal to half minus epsilon. Okay. So within this range, from 0 to half in this case, or minus half to half in the case of bosonic string theory, as you will see, we don't see any other spatial point. Okay, lambda equal to 0 corresponds to basically sitting at the top. Right? Nothing will change if you set lambda equal to 0. Okay. Now, let's see what happens in the other case. Okay, so you should get another set class of orbits which will have the total energy density larger than EP. Okay. And we get a very similar formula to what we had in this case, okay, except that this cos has become cos hyperbolic, which is just as well, because after all we are looking for solutions for which T naught naught is larger than EP, and indeed T naught naught is larger than EP in this case. Okay. Pressure is given by a very similar formula, but this f of x naught, this function, okay, has now a slightly different shape. The sine has become sine hyperbolic. Okay, nothing much changes. Okay. And again we can see that as the time goes to infinity, the pressure goes to 0. Okay. And hence the system evolves to a pressureless gas asymptotically. Okay, so even in this case, when the orbit has energy larger than the maximum of the potential, the system still evolves to a pressureless gas. And again we can compute the dilaton source, okay, which is given by EP times this function f, and that of course also goes to 0 as time goes to infinity. Okay. And I should perhaps just say that when I indicate how to derive these results, I will only concentrate on this case, okay, because given the results in this, okay, we can in fact derive these results by an analytic continuation. So what you need to do is to first of all take lambda tilde to I lambda tilde, okay, and at the same time we have to make a shift of x naught by an imaginary term, okay, so as to make the whole thing real. Okay. But so once you have derived this, you can go from here to here by an appropriate analytic continuation.
Why the pressure is the dilaton source?
No, this is an independent calculation. The pressure, a priori there is no guarantee that the pressure is the dilaton source. Okay. But when we calculate the dilaton source from, the same kind of technique which will allow us to calculate the pressure, okay, by studying the coupling to gravity, right? We can use the same technique to calculate the dilaton source, because we simply try to calculate the coupling of the dilaton to the system, and we will find that that is given by the same function. Okay, so this summarizes the results for superstring theory. What I'll do now is to state what the corresponding results are for bosonic string theory, because there is one important difference that comes about when we deal with bosonic string theory. Okay, maybe I'll put this up. Okay, it doesn't matter perhaps. Okay, so here are the results for bosonic string theory. Okay. First, in the case when total energy is less than EP. So what we see here is a very similar structure, but with one important difference. Okay. And to see the difference, I'll put up the corresponding answer for superstrings. First of all, there is a change in scale. Okay, what was x naught here has become square root of 2x naught, but this change in scale is simply a reflection of the fact that a tachyon mass in the superstring theory is is 1 over root 2. Tachyon mass square is minus 1 half in superstring theory, whereas it's 1 in the bosonic string theory. So the change of scale is not too important. The important point to notice is that which was sine square lambda tilde pi here has become sine of lambda tilde pi. Now what change does it imply? First of all, we see from here that this formula, the formula for the energy density, is symmetric under the change of sine of lambda tilde. Right? Cos doesn't change when you take lambda tilde to minus lambda tilde. But this does change. Okay. So what this formula tells you is that if we, that for the same energy, okay, we have two different, in two inequivalent orbits, okay, one for positive sign of lambda tilde, one for negative sign of lambda tilde, which was not the case here. Okay. Here for two different energies, we got the same orbit. Well, we thought we got the same orbit, but in fact these are also different but related by symmetry, as we will see. Okay. So let's look at this picture of the potential and see what is happening here. Okay. If you look at the potential, okay, there we are considering the case when the total energy is less than Ep. So our orbit, our energy is somewhere here, and you see that indeed we do expect that we should get two inequivalent orbits, okay, because we can have an orbit which is oscillating in this region, or we can have an orbit which is moving in this region, okay, where we are in this region, right? We could start either by displacing the tachyon to the left, to the right, or to the left. Now, this of course we could have done even for the superstring theory. Okay, in any potential we could displace the initial tachyon either to the right or to the left, so you should get two inequivalent orbits. Except that in the case of superstring theory, the potential was symmetric. Okay. So even though we expect two inequivalent orbits, the final results for those two orbits will be the same, right? It, yeah.
How do you understand lambda equal minus half?
Yeah, I'm coming to that. Okay, we'll see that. I mean, even for any negative lambda tilde, there is a problem. Okay, so we'll see exactly. I mean, well, we'll not see what the problem. I mean, we'll not really be able to interpret the problem, but at least we'll see that there is a problem. Okay, on this side. Okay, so this then is the interpretation of why we are getting two different answers for the same energy. Okay, and now let's try to examine this function in some more detail. Okay, and see what kind of physical intuition we can draw from there. So again, I have written down the same formula here. Okay, the same things which appear there. Okay. Now, if we examine this, we see that for lambda tilde larger than 0, even though the expression for f of x naught is slightly different, the essential physics is the same. Okay. In particular, as x naught goes to infinity, the function goes to 0. Okay. So which shows that the pressure goes to 0 as time goes to infinity. Similarly, the delay on source, which is again proportional to the same function f of x naught, goes to 0. And furthermore, if we take lambda tilde equal to half, then this function vanishes identically, this vanishes identically. So that would correspond to placing the tachyon at the minimum of the effective potential. So this basically means that if we are considering orbits, okay, where you have displaced the tachyon on the right hand, on the right, okay, the side on which there is this local minimum, then the physics is more or less the same. Okay, although the details are slightly different. But if we take lambda tilde to be negative, it doesn't matter however small lambda tilde is, if we take lambda tilde to be negative, then by examining this function, we see that the sign of this term becomes negative for negative lambda tilde. So there is always some value of time, some value of x naught, at which the denominator vanishes. And hence, this function simply blows up. So what this shows is that if we consider orbits for which the tachyon has been displaced to the left, then as the system evolves in time, the pressure becomes singular at some specific time. In particular, if lambda t is equal to half, then the pressure is singular even at time t equal to 0. So while this is hard to explain from the by using this potential picture, okay, and we perhaps shouldn't expect that the simple potential picture will be able to explain the results in full string theory, what this shows is that at least that there is some problem, okay, some kind of singularity on this side. Okay. So this potential, which you see in the string field theory analysis, that it's unbounded from below, okay, that there is something, I mean, some genuine physical singularity, okay, on the left hand side, okay, because if we let the system evolve in time, then it does hit some kind of singularity at finite time.
But after the singularity, you expect that the solution makes sense past the singularity?
Well, see, once it hits the singularity, it's not clear what one means by continuing past the singularity. Right? I mean, it's not something which is like an analytic continuum. If it was such that the expansion becomes divergent, but still the singularity is somewhere else, then you could continue it past the singularity. But here the expansion is genuinely, it is hitting an infinity at x not equal to, at this value of x not, right? In particular, for any value of x not which is smaller than this value, the pressure is very large, right, as x not is approaching. So up to this value, if we trust this solution, then we see that the pressure is actually increasing to infinity.
So do you expect non-perturbatic correction on the left of the potential?
Yeah. So certainly, this whole answer is at the open string tree level, right? So one might have hoped that maybe open string loop level will cure this problem. But once you go into open string loop level, we run into the problem that now we have closed string tachyons, right? And so then you don't know how to quantize the system in the first place. So, at least for the bosonic string theory, it seems that this problem is a genuine problem. Okay. In the case of superstring theory, this problem doesn't arise because of this symmetry. Okay. So, this probably is another indication that there is something genuinely wrong with bosonic string theory. Okay. There is no real consistent theory, okay, in which you can study this singularity, because any consistent theory doesn't seem to have this singularity. Theories which are inconsistent because of closed string tachyons seem to have this singularity. Okay, are there any other questions?
The value of tachyon at the singular point is finite.
See, the value of the tachyon is hard to describe because that can be changed by a redefinition of the tachyon field. Right? That's why I have never while describing the solution, I have never told you what the value of the tachyon is. Because that's an ambiguous question. Okay, energy momentum tensor, at least at the open string tree level, can be calculated by a specific procedure. Okay, but not the value of the tachyon field. Okay. For example, even on the side where the thing is well behaved, right? I have drawn here so as if the minimum of the potential is at a finite T naught, finite value. But since it's taking infinite amount of time for the tachyon to roll towards the minimum, it's more natural to consider a new field, okay, which is related to this tachyon by some field redefinition, in which the potential is really shifted to at infinity. Right? And that's the particular convention that Pilgin was using in his talk. Right? The effective action that he wrote down had the potential having its minimum at infinity, and that is not contradictory to this picture, right? Because a finite value can always be shifted to infinite value by a field redefinition. What is unambiguous is how much time it takes for the particle to reach its asymptote.
How do you understand the integral values of lambda?
How do we understand the Yeah. See, again, when lambda tilde becomes larger than half, okay, that is equivalent to having lambda tilde less than half, right? So you don't gain anything by going beyond this range. Okay. And finally, then let me put up the transparency for the other class of orbits when the total energy is larger than the value at the maximum. Okay. So in this case, okay, again we have similar formula, sine hyperbolic square is replaced by sine hyperbolic, and again by examining this formula we can see that if lambda tilde is larger than 0, if it's positive, okay, then everything is well behaved. As time goes to infinity, the pressure goes to 0. Okay. But if we choose lambda tilde to be less than 0, which corresponds to giving it a velocity in the other direction, okay, then again we hit a singularity at finite time. Okay, that follows just by examining this formula over here. Okay, so whether you are considering orbits of energy larger than the brain tension or less than the brain tension, we see the same feature, that if the system is pushed to the side in which the local minimum exists, then everything seems to be well defined. The system asymptotically approaches some configuration with a fixed energy momentum tensor, whereas if we push it to the side, okay, in which the potential is not well behaved, then we have some genuine problem. Pardon? Yeah. That's right, yeah. No, see, that is the point, that here it doesn't bounce back, right? What this shows, that the pressure goes to zero asymptotically, which means that if the energy is larger than the maximum, let me see if I can. So essentially what is happening is that it's taking infinite amount of time to reach the minimum, right? So there is no question of bouncing back. Okay. If of course you continue the trajectory backwards in time, right, then you will hit an initial singularity, right? Because after all, if you go backwards in time, then that means you are coming from the wrong side, from the bad side, okay, and then you hit a singularity.
Excuse me,
yeah.
Is that the minus in the second part of the formula for f of x0? There is one minus here, the minus x0 sine hyperbolic, or should be plus?
No, this is minus.
But so for lambda equal 1/2?
Okay, see, here the point is, this formula one shouldn't trust beyond sine hyperbolic lambda tilde pi equal to 1. Okay, because the radius of convergence will basically become 0, exactly at when this is equal to 1. Okay, because you can see that even at x not equal to 0, okay, this is divergent. Okay, so you should trust this only in the range when sine hyperbolic lambda tilde pi is less than 1.
Okay,
so in that region, this never diverges. So the problem only comes from this. Yeah.
So these are all results if you expand about the flat background.
That's right, yeah. These are DP brains in flat background. Okay. In fact, okay, you don't really need to have flat background. If you take a background which is a product of a flat time direction times some compact space, right, these results will still hold.
But I have in mind a cosmological background.
No, in the cosmological background, the situation will change, right? Because in principle, one could try to repeat these calculations there, but certainly these results are derived in a flat background.
If you have in fact a theory, then if we assume the homogeneity based on the cosmological principle, then pressure is the same.
No, I didn't. See, here, we don't couple this to gravity, because that comes in higher order in G-string, right? Okay, so it is consistent in this approximation to consider a completely flat background, okay, and have the evolution of this system. Right? Once you couple it to gravity, then of course it will generate its own gravitational field. Okay? And I'll probably talk about that in the last lecture. Okay, what happens when you start coupling it to closed strings?
Physical picture. I mean, we're talking about sort of the decay of a soliton. Is it that these processes are highly inelastic? I mean, thinking about the slow time evolution, is it because it's not a violent collision that's going on, but something inelastic?
Okay. It's not clear completely how to, interpret this in that language. See, one reason one might expect that we shouldn't have oscillation around the minimum, okay, is because there are no physical open string states. Okay. Suppose there are, normally what happens, if you have a normal scalar field, okay, there are harmonic modes which describe the oscillation of the scalar field around the minimum. Okay. Those correspond to, once you quantize those, you will get physical scalar particle around the minimum. Now we know that those modes shouldn't be present in this case, right? Because we have seen that when you quantize the theory around the vacuum, there should be no physical open string state. Okay, so that in some sense provides some justification of why there is no oscillatory behavior, okay, around the minimum. Okay, but one doesn't really give any more justification.
Okay,
Okay, I mean somehow the string theory seems to know about the absence of oscillatory modes, and it solves the problem in this complicated way, right? By making the pressure go to zero asymptotically rather than oscillate around the minimum. Okay, so in the last few minutes, let me at least begin some discussion on how we go about deriving these results. So before we do that, let me just summarize by saying what exactly we have done so far. So basically what we have done so far, both in the last lecture and in this lecture, is to state the existence of various solutions in classical open string field theory. Okay. And then we have specified the energy momentum tensor associated with these solutions, okay, both in the static case as well as in the dynamical case. For example, in the static case, we said that the energy density is 0 at the minimum. That's a statement about the energy momentum tensor. Okay. Or when we said that the soliton, okay, describes a dp minus 1 brain, okay, or a lower dimensional d brain, that's a statement about the energy of the soliton, because we know what the tension of the dp, the lower dimensional d brains are. So once we say, for example, a kink is identified with a dp minus 1 brain, that automatically gives a that automatically involves a statement about the mass of the kink. So all those results that we have stated so far can be thought of as a statement of the energy momentum tensor associated with various solutions. And so what we'll try to describe in this and the next lecture is how these results are derived. Okay. And although I'll not be able to give a completely detailed description, okay, I'll try to indicate at least the steps that are involved in deriving these results. Now, there are varieties of methods that are used to derive these results, and perhaps the two extremely opposite approaches, okay, are the approaches based on string field theory and the approach based on two-dimensional conformal field theory. This is the most direct approach. This is perhaps the most indirect approach. And then there are varieties of other approaches which lie between these two extremes, okay, which somehow combine the good things of this and this. So our main focus will be on this approach, because this is the approach which has been successful in explaining both the static results as well as the time-dependent results, okay, whereas the approach based on string field theory has been successful mostly in establishing the results about the time independent solutions. Okay, string field theory has not so far been successful in dealing with time dependent solutions. So this will be our main focus, but what I'll do is that I'll give a one-page summary of what exactly one does in the approach based on string field theory. Okay, so the steps involved in string field theory are reasonably simple. The first thing one does is to, at least it's reasonably simple to understand, okay, although not so simple to implement perhaps. So the first thing one does is to construct the field theory action for infinite number of fields which describe the dynamics of open strings on the D-brain. I told you last time that in order to describe the dynamics of open strings on a D-brain, we have to basically introduce one field for every open string state that we have, okay, one field which creates that open string state as its quanta. So that gives infinite number of fields, okay, and they have interactions among themselves, so it's a highly interacting field theory. Okay. So the first thing one needs to do is to write down an effect, an action which describes the interaction of those infinite number of fields. And this fortunately can be done in a very neat form, okay, and this was done by Witten long time ago, okay, and it turns out that it is possible to write down a field theory based on this infinite number of fields which has only cubic interactions, okay. So it has a quadratic term which is like the kinetic term, and it has a cubic interaction, but that cubic interaction term of course involves infinite number of fields, okay. So there are many terms, each term involves three fields, but then you sum over all possible fields. And then in the second step, okay, what one does is to basically take this field theory and try to find classical solutions in this. Okay. And this is the task which so far has been done only numerically. Okay. In principle, it is possible that perhaps one can find some closed form solution of the string field theory equations of motion. But so far, what has been done here is to look for solutions numerically. And the basic philosophy that one uses here is to begin not with infinite number of fields, but with a finite set, okay, which is a truncation of that infinite set in some appropriate way. And once we have restricted to a finite set, we can solve the equations of motion numerically. Okay? If you have a small set, then you can solve it analytically, but otherwise you can solve it numerically. As long as there is a finite number of variables, okay, you can always try to solve the equations. And then what one does is to expand the set. Okay, so suppose you have started with 10 fields, then you expand the set to include 15 fields and then repeat the analysis. Okay? And you see if the results converge. Okay, that as you include more and more fields, your final results for the energy momentum tensor as well as the solution should converge to some specific value. And it turns out that indeed the results do converge. Okay? And that's the way one uses string field theory to construct solutions of equations of motion. But as I said, this is not the approach that I will be describing in this talk. Okay. Because this approach has not been successful for time-dependent solutions. Yeah. Yeah. In this case, the point is when you look for solutions, okay, we can look for, first of all, homogeneous solutions, the space-independent solutions, which are easy to look for. But you can also look for solutions which depend on, say, one space direction, as you will do when you are looking for a kink, okay, or two space directions when you are looking for some kind of vortex and so on. Okay, so depending on what kind of solution you are looking for, you can take your appropriate answers. Yeah, so these are done for, okay, there has been some attempts to construct time-dependent solutions, but the results are very inconclusive. Yeah, so what one does is that you first compactify, suppose you are looking for a solution which depends on one space direction, okay, you first compactify that space direction, okay, so that the momentum becomes discrete in that direction, okay, and then you include more sub to a given momentum, okay, because the larger the momentum, the higher the mass of the state. Okay. So that way you can always restrict to finite number of states, and once you got into the momentum space, okay, then the interaction terms are easy to handle. Right? Because interaction terms typically are complicated functions of momentum. So in the position space it's difficult. But you can solve the equations in the momentum space. Okay. And that's the approach that one uses.
So initial
yeah. Pardon? No, so that I said that we don't use, I mean this method has not been successful in solving time-dependent problems, right? So you look for, time-independent solutions by using string field theory. Okay, in fact, that is one of the reasons, that is one of the difficulties in using this for initial value problem.
So for example, those pressure that we formulas, they are not derived?
No. They are not derived using string field theory. They are derived using conformal field theory techniques.
Without the need of compactifying the direction of the deep brain.
Yeah, we'll see what method one uses in conformal field theory. Okay, these are exact results. Okay. Okay, one uses various tricks, but these are exact results at a tree-level open string theory. Okay, we use a tree-level open string theory, but otherwise there is no further approximation that has gone into these results. Okay, so maybe I'll just mention briefly what conformal field theory technique does, and then I'll stop. Okay. So the conformal field theory approach is basically based on the correspondence between solutions of string field theory equations of motion and two-dimensional conformal field theories. Okay. And I'll illustrate this for simplicity by working in bosonic string theory. In fact, that is the reason why bosonic string theories are very useful, because the techniques are easily generalizable to superstring theory, but they are easy to demonstrate, okay, first working within the context of bosonic string theory. Okay. So I'll illustrate the conformal field theory methods for finding solutions in the context of bosonic string theory. So let's consider dibrens in flat 25 plus 1 dimensional space time. Okay, we are working the bosonic string theory. So in this case, the wall sheet action for the open strings is given by this simple action over here. Okay, I have included only the matter part here, there is also a ghost part, and I am working the covariant gauge. Okay, and because you are dealing with open strings, okay, we have to talk about boundary conditions on these x mu's. So the open string wall sheet can be described in a variety of ways. Okay, perhaps the easiest to visualize is to view this as a strip. Okay, so we call this the W plane. So as the open string moves, okay, it spans out a strip. Okay, so we parameterize the open string wall sheet by W, with real W going from minus infinity to infinity and imaginary W going between 0 and pi. And so then we have to specify appropriate boundary conditions at these two ends. Okay. And we can specify, okay, depending on what kind of dibrain we are dealing with, the boundary condition on these wall sheet fields x mu will be either Dirichlet or Neumann. Okay. For coordinates which are transverse to the dibrain, we impose Dirichlet boundary condition, and for coordinates which are tangential to the dibrain, we impose Neumann boundary condition. But it will be more convenient to work in the z plane, okay, which is related to W by this exponential map, and the W plane as given here under this map goes into the upper half z plane. Okay, you can easily verify this by seeing what the strip does under this map. Okay, the strip goes to the upper half plane, and the two boundaries, okay, basically goes over to the boundary through the real z plane. Okay, one boundary goes to from 0 to infinity, the other boundary goes from 0 to minus infinity. Okay. So we will be using this open string wall sheet, and so we will write this action on the in the z plane with appropriate boundary condition on the fields x mu. Now let us consider adding to the original wall sheet action a new term, okay, a new term which is a boundary term. Okay, we are not changing the action in the bulk, but we simply add some term along the boundary. Okay, and the kind of term we are adding is integral over the whole real axis, okay, of some vortex operator, some operator on the boundary. Okay, typically this corresponds to some open string vortex operator, because open string vortex operators are operators which are inserted at the boundary. Now, when you add such a term to the original action, typically the total action will not describe a conformal invariant theory. If you choose an arbitrary operator V of t, then this will break conformal invariance of the theory. Okay. But it may happen that for some special choice of V, we have a conformal field theory. Okay. And the result that we will be using is that for every choice of V which gives a conformal invariant theory, we have a classical solution of open string field equations. Okay, I will not certainly prove this, okay, but this is a general result that one uses in string theory again and again, that there is a one-to-one correspondence between conformal invariant two-dimensional field theories and solutions of string theory equations of motion. And that correspondence in this specific context means that whenever we can find some operator V of t whose integral when added to the action gives a conformal invariant theory, okay, that automatically gives you a solution of the classical open string field equations. Okay, so this is the method that I will be using for constructing the solution. Okay. In other words, to find, in order to find this one parameter family of solutions, okay, what we need to do is to find a one parameter family of such operators, okay, which can be associated with the solutions. So what I will do next time is to show how we can go about constructing a one-parameter family of operators of this kind, which describe the one-parameter family of orbits that we described in for which we'll describe the results. Okay. So I think I'll stop here, and if there are any questions, I can take it. Yeah.
So what happens if lambda goes to minus 1/2 for the photonic phase?
Yeah, if lambda goes to minus 1/2, then you see that the singularity occurs at x not equal to 0. Right? If you look at the formula, right? If you take lambda equal to minus 1/2, then even at x not equal to 0, there is a singularity. So it doesn't get any time to evolve at all. Right? It hits the singularity as soon as you start it.
But what's the interpretation of vanishing energy?
Well, I mean, the point is, because the pressure is singular, right, it's not clear that we should get a simple interpretation of vanishing energy. So what this is saying is that on the other side, okay, that whereas on the right hand side, okay, even though the usual field theory intuitions are not correct, are not working, at least there is some kind of field theory that one can cook up which captures qualitatively the behavior of the system on the